Joining me now on the exchange to talk about flowers, bees, honey, and how they all factor in helping us understand the health of our environment are two Oregon State University professors with the Pollinator Health Program and the Oregon Bee Project. Dr. Dewey Karan, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
And Dr. Ramesh Sakili, welcome.
Hello. How are you?
Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. Let's start with a bit of background on you both. Dr. Karan, I understand you and Dr. Sagili are both in the Department of Horticulture at OSU, but you also did a lot of work at the University of Delaware. Tell us about your work there and how you first became interested in this field.
Fine. Thank you, and good morning, all. So I was a professor on the East Coast, University of Maryland and University of Delaware, my profession. I retired in 2009, moving to Oregon to be closer to grandkids. Then started the affiliation at Oregon State University. Currently, I am working with the Oregon Master Beekeeper Program, which is a statewide program that we have three different levels of ability to begin to start with bees and then take it on to like an intermediate level. And we even have a higher level, what we call a master's level. And this is a statewide program.
Okay. And Dr. Sakili, tell us about your background.
Yeah, so I obtained my PhD from Texas A&M University around 2007, specializing in honeybee research. And I was hired at Oregon State University in 2009 to address all the honeybee health issues that were happening at that time with both commercial beekeepers and the backyard beekeepers to some degree as well. So we established a very vibrant program here at Oregon State University. So our program focuses on honeybee health, which is a very broad topic. We deal with everything from pests and pathogens that are impacting honeybees. And then another prime area, which is really exciting, is trying to understand honeybee nutrition. So honeybee nutrition is another prime area. And then we work very closely with farmers to improve their pollination. So honeybee pollination is another really important area. And as Dr. Karan mentioned, he has been really instrumental in helping with our Oregon Master Beekeeper Program, which is more like an extension education program to mostly address new beekeepers that are getting into bees. And so we help them along with some commercial beekeepers as well.
So tell me, what is apiculture?
So apiculture is actually culture of bees, right? Keeping bees is basically the science of keeping bees, or art of keeping bees is apiculture. Because the scientific name of honeybee is Apis mellifera. That's where it comes. Apiculture is keeping bees. Or sometimes we always use that term also. It's a little misleading, but we also use for people that study bees as well, that they're studying apiculture.
So Dr. Karan, help me understand the Oregon Bee Project and how this pollination process is an indicator of the health of our environment.
So through an extension effort at Oregon State University, we have a couple of major projects that work statewide. I'm working with the Master Beekeeper Program. The Oregon Bee Project is another one. Both of them focus on pollination. Both of them focus on understanding what our pollination fauna is and also then what plants are most valuable, what are visited by the various pollinators. We estimate that we've got somewhere approaching 1,000 different species of bees. That would be distinct species, of which one, the honeybee, is one that we can manage, and beekeepers and people keep bees in their yard. There are some others that we might use in pollination service, focusing on improving their nesting capabilities around crops that can benefit, whereas the remainder are those that pollinate the flowers, a lot of our native flora, for example, that benefit wildlife and our environment around us. So we have these two major programs statewide.
So you're a master beekeeper?
Indeed, yes, I am.
How does one become a master beekeeper?
So in Oregon, we have a program for those that start. We have a getting started or an apprentice level in which you learn the basics and have a mentor to help you through those first couple years, which are, initially getting started is, it's a learning curve. And so we will assign a mentor from our more experienced beekeepers to help individuals through that level. Journey level is more getting used to bees, gaining some practice. And finally, we do have a master's level, and a master's level assists with a research project, or they develop a outreach type of project in their own communities, and then have a basis in terms of their experience as well as the materials that we supply through the program as they are going from apprentice to journey to master's.
Okay, so there's the journey. Dr. Sakili, when we talk to kids, how do we get kids involved or interested in this environment? And let's start with your story. What got you interested in working with the environment, with bees, with honey?
Yeah, I have a very interesting story. Probably we don't have time that much today, but I'll be very quick. So I didn't think of studying bees when I was in high school or even in probably late high school as well. So my story is the impact of bees. I mean, I know we talk about climate change and so many things are happening today at a dizzying pace. But for students, as you asked, I would say when I was about maybe 10 years old, so I'm originally from India. And so when I was there, my grandparents used to raise sunflowers, so hybrid sunflowers. And you need pollination. Sunflowers, you can't get really the seed if the bees are not moving the pollen from one flower to the other, right? That's basically what we call cross-pollination. And it was amazing. I didn't understand much at that age, but then I saw my grandparents hiring people. So they will hire labor to wear gloves, and then they will rub each of those sunflower heads with their hand. And I was amazed. They said, why are they doing this? Then they said, we don't have enough bees for pollination. And I didn't know whether it was because of indiscriminate use of insecticides or some other reasons, but they didn't have enough bee pollinators to do the pollination of these sunflower heads. And it was amazing. Then at that point, I just thought, wow, bees are amazing. We really need them for our food production. And that was my real recollection. But then I didn't decide to study bees until I was in my degree program, where I had a bachelor's of science in agriculture, where we studied and I took a class in apiculture. And that was my first exposure to really working with honeybees. And then I decided, and entomology was always my passion, entomology, study of insects. And of course, you can't think of any more intelligent insect than honeybee on the planet. And I thought this would be cool to study. And so when I got an opportunity, I applied for a PhD program here in the United States at Texas A&M, and that's my story. So what I'll tell kids at this point is food security is really important for us. And I know sometimes people think about honeybees especially as they are producing honey for us and that's it, right? But I know pollination is a huge, huge thing. Without pollination, there are several crops you can't even think of. About one-third of our diet really depends on our bees. So food security is really critical, and I want this high school kids or elementary school or even middle school kids to understand how important bees are, not just for our food security, but also for our ecosystem. There are so many wild plants that are dependent on bees for pollination. So without them, we can think them as indicators of any problems in the environment as well, because if their health isn't doing well, then probably we have to rethink.
And so, Dr. Karan, segueing from that, the health of bees to the environment, how do we know about the health of our environment just from studying the bees?
Well, bees are what we might call, in many cases, one of those keystone species. For without pollination, then we're not going to get reproduction of most of the flowering plants that are around us. Now, those plants are pollinated by a big menagerie of different types of organisms. Some plants, when their flowers open at night, and so they're visited by night flying moths, for example, or by night flying birds. Hummingbirds are different pollinators for other types of plants that have a very closed flower, where the rewards of the flower, the nectar and pollen, are very deep within the flower. So of all of the various plants, the vast majority are pollinated by an insect, and of that, the vast majority are by bees. So how can we tell the health of an environment is we can watch, we can study and determine What's happening to populations of these organisms?
Dr. Curran, you were talking about the population of pollinators and the health of our environment. Please continue.
Yes, thank you, and welcome back, listeners. So what we're trying to determine is the population of these organisms and how they then affect pollination. As a keystone species, without the pollinators, we're not going to have the continuation of all of the various types of flowering plants. And different plants rely on a different bee. So we're studying populations of honeybees and how people can keep those honeybees, and our Master Beekeeper program assists with that. And our Bee Atlas assists with studies of the natural flora, the natural pollinators, bees and other pollinators, not just of, they will vary from one season to the next, so population and population trends over time, to see the health and to help determine the health of our environments.
So, Dr. Sakili, you've written extensively about all of this. Talk about some of your latest research.
Yeah, so as I said, we have a very broad program addressing honeybee health. So we do a lot of work on mites. So varroa mite, for the audience, I think if you're a beekeeper, you probably recognize that name. It's spelled V-A-R-R-O-A, varroa. Varroa mite is an ectoparasite, like you see ticks on cattle. Something similar. So it feeds on the abdominal fat bodies and also sucks a little bit of their blood, which we call hemolymph, and it transmits a lot of viruses. So that has been a lethal parasite for the beekeeping industry, and it has totally changed the beekeeping industry since its accidental arrival into the United States, we believe, around 1987. So that's a huge problem for beekeepers, and we have tried to address that by doing a lot of research on varroa mites. We look at some of the miticides that beekeepers use to control these lethal parasite varroa mite. So we do a lot of other research on some basic biology of varroa mite as well. And there are other pathogens like or pests and like Nosema. There is a lot of other things that are ailing bees. And so we look at a lot of those other things. But recently we were funded by USDA to look at another problem called brood disease. It's a European full brood disease. It impacts the larva, the babies of the bees. And so it's mostly concerning at this point for commercial beekeepers that do pollination, especially beekeepers that are going for blueberry pollination are impacted with this. And even the blueberry growers are concerned. Maybe that would impact their pollination because the colonies don't grow real well when this ailment is there in those hives. So we are addressing that in a big USDA grant, which is a multidisciplinary, multi-state grant led by OSU. So that's another recent problem called European fall brood we are addressing. But then we have other areas of research, as I said before, honeybee nutrition, which is a very critical area. And not much work has been done in the last 20 years. But since you heard about that colony collapse disorder around 2006 and 2007, there has been more emphasis in studying a lot of facets of honeybee health. So we are studying honeybee nutrition, trying to understand very basics and also very much applied aspects as well. So basic would be trying to understand the basic needs of honeybees. We know human needs, right? We know there are multivitamin tablets we use these days because so much research has been done on human health and the benefits of these vitamins, minerals. So those are called micronutrients, and we don't understand much about the requirements of micronutrients for honeybees. And so we are trying to understand that in a very concerted way at Oregon State University Honeybee Lab. So those are a few areas that we are concentrating on now, honeybee health and honeybee nutrition.
Dr. Sakili, you also authored or co-authored The Value of Hazard Quotients in Honeybee Ecotoxicology. What was that paper about?
Yeah, so that's mostly about for the audience that are not aware of hazard quotients. So that's one measure, not EPA, but many other researchers use hazard quotient is if you are exposed to a certain amount of insecticide. So it's not just for bees. Hazard quotient you can measure for many other organisms as well. It could be aquatic animals or humans or any other things you can think of. So hazard quotient is basically what you are exposed to and how that will impact that pesticide. So we were looking at hazard quotient for several insecticides that bees are exposed to when they're foraging in their natural environment. So if you're a beekeeper, you have bees placed in a pollination setup, could be cherries or maybe in southern Oregon in pears, then your bees might be exposed to something that is in the environment. Maybe a farmer has sprayed to control a pest. And farmers, they really need those tools as well to control their pests. And sometimes bees may accidentally be exposed to high doses of those when they are foraging in that environment. So those are the some things that we looked at in different, at least four different cropping systems, including cherries in the Dalles area. Then we looked at hybrid carrot seed production in Central Oregon. And then we have meadow foam here close to the valley. And then we looked at another crop as well. So that was the study that we were trying to estimate the hazard quotient for bees when they are foraging in these natural areas or crop pollination systems.
My guests today are Drs. Dewey Karan and Ramesh Sagili from the Horticulture Department at Oregon State University. We're talking about the importance of flowers, honeybees, and pollination in understanding the state of our regional environment. Dr. Karan, talk about the Oregon Bee Project's strategic plan. You're a master beekeeper. What's the plan?
So the Oregon Master Beekeeper plan is in terms of our training to bring in new people and to do our training for mentors. So that's the beekeeping aspect. For the Bee Atlas, the plan there is to train individuals in how to recognize the variation that we have, the huge number of different species of native bees, to participate in what we like to call bio blitzes. That is, go to an area that has not been surveyed very well, and over a period of a day or a couple days to do a survey of what is there that's available for the pollinators, and then to prepare some of the representative pollinators for what we call our museum collection, our reference collection of what is in the state, because they have to then be identified. Many of these, particularly those that are not very common, but still very important for some of our native plants and the pollination, it's very difficult to try to identify them in the field. So the master plan is to help elucidate what we have in terms of our pollinator fauna in the state, identify it, and train individuals so that this may go, continue on as a continuing basis. Both programs will continue on a continuing basis.
Well, I was curious when I was researching for this discussion about honey production around the world. So I looked it up and I found quite a number of different sources with conflicting information, to be quite honest with you, in ranking the countries that produce the most honey. But what surprised me was that Iran and Ukraine were on the list. Turkey was another surprise. And I certainly didn't know Ethiopia was the largest honey producer on the African continent. What countries are the biggest producers of honey, and how does the U.S. rank on that list? And how do the bees feel about us taking their honey, Dr. Sagili?
Okay. So, yeah, unfortunately, I don't have the world production numbers. You may be right, yeah. So we only produce probably one-third of our consumption in the United States, the honey. And probably we get probably most of that from outside as well. There are a lot of imports of honey that comes from. So you may be correct. So I don't have the recent numbers worldwide, who is top in the production, but maybe you're correct on those. But I'll just talk about honey production here in the United States. So we produce about 140 million pounds, I think this was the... So there is an agency called... So, Mike, if you're interested, I think more reliable numbers you can find from an agency led by USDA. It's called NASS, National Agricultural Statistics Services. So they monitor how many colonies are there in the United States. And it's hard. I think they have done a great job, but this type of statistics for the world in other countries, I don't think that's that much reliable. But I know we still have to rely on some numbers that come from outside. But I think the United States has done a great job with this NAS taking numbers for the last probably 50 years plus now. So we produce about 140 million pounds of honey, which is valued about $350 million. And for Oregon, it's about 3.4 million pounds, and probably the value is about 11 million pounds. So honey production, again, could change every year depending on the season, right? So each year is very different. The bees do well in some years because of a lot of climatic factors as well. So it depends, and it fluctuates a lot. And I know the honey prices were okay last year, I mean, in 2023, but I think they are down now. So beekeepers are impacted whenever these prices go down because of honey prices fluctuating because of the world market as well.
Well, I appreciate that reference to NASS. I'll check them out. How is climate change impacting the health of the pollinator population?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and I wish I had a great answer for you. So currently, we do not have a good understanding on impacts of climate change on bees, but we anticipate significant impacts of climate change, especially with the increase in temperatures we have seen, right? We had this heat dome in many places, including Texas, and we had Pacific Northwest. We got some 110, 115 degrees a couple of years ago. So those will really impact bees. And so we think high temperatures could impact the nectar and pollen production, not just the production, even the quality of pollen. A couple of studies have shown the protein can be denatured. So pollen is a primary source of protein, like we eat beans or chicken or any other meat for our protein needs. Unfortunately, honeybees and other bees are dependent on pollen for their protein source. That's their only source. And if the quality or the quantity of that pollen production is impacted because of change in plant phenology or plant physiology, because of high temperatures or changes in other things because of climate change, that would really impact because the plants, this is an indirect impact I'm talking about. No one has quantified direct impacts of high temperatures and other things on bees, which is still an undergoing research. But we think that's the first thing will happen is there will be changes in phenology of plants as well, right? So there is something, the term we use, phenology mismatches. So maybe in some areas the plants will start blooming before even the bees are out of their winter, especially the bees that are nesting underground, like bumblebees and other ground nesting bees we talk about. So those guys, if some plants are blooming before they even they're out of their hibernation phase, then they are not able to access those food resources. So there will be a lot of pollen or phenology mismatches that we think could impact bee health as well. But again, these are all in very initial stages. These are some very logical impacts that we are thinking about. But I know climate change is a big factor that we should start thinking about and see how we can mitigate those impacts on pollinators like honeybees, which are really important for our food security.
And Dr. Karan, we've got about a minute left. What would you like to see in the next 5 to 10 years to ensure a healthy pollinator population and a thriving environmental ecosystem?
That is, again, also a great question. Certainly what we need to be thinking about is the resource for the bees. So bees visit flowers. So we would be thinking that we need to strengthen that and make the lack of those resources less of a stressor for the honeybee colonies. The work at OSU and many other universities as well that Dr. Skilly explained, looking at the pests that are inside bee colonies, including that varroa mite, we need to continue that aspect. Our bees are not strong enough to resist this invasive pest, and so our beekeepers have to intervene. So the next 5 or 10 years, we need to look at both the resources for the bees and for the aspect of our managing systems and how we might then strengthen our colonies and make them populous so that they can visit more flowers and do a better job pollinating what's out there.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you, Dr. Karan.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for the invite.
And thank you, too, Dr. Skilly.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.